Support for Level Up comes from Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in to our second episode of this Level Up podcast. We apologize for not getting this out last week. We had some technical difficulties where all you heard was me, which I'm not going to punish you with that. So we're here. We're going to come to you this week with a two-part series. Over these next two episodes, we're going to be exploring the ACTFL proficiency guidelines for listening, reading, writing, and speaking. Our goal for this episode and the next is to be informative, try to help you and ourselves understand more of the proficiency guidelines and how to use them in our classes. This episode's focus is reading and listening. The question I want you to think about as we go through reading and listening today, and the question we'll try to talk about, is should we be modifying authentic material in any way for reading and listening in our classrooms? Think on that as we get into Level Up. This is Miles Nance, one of your hosts today, your main host. You're welcome. I'm joined today also by Brandon Welker, Davin Lemke, and Roger Burt. They're joining me today. We're going to be discussing, as I mentioned, the ACTFL proficiency guidelines. Before we get into that, I just want to give you a very brief introduction to what ACTFL is. ACTFL stands for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. Why do we use ACTFL? What's the purpose of using ACTFL? Well, ACTFL themselves, they've been around for a long time. They've been around since as their own entity since the 70s. So they've got a lot of longevity. And really their entire purpose throughout those years and continuing purpose is to improve language instruction in the classroom. And some of the ways that they've done that is to come up with these proficiency guidelines. And their first proficiency guidelines came out in, I believe, 1986. And they broke down proficiency into multiple categories. We've got novice, intermediate, advanced, superior. That's what they came out with originally. And even those are broken down into more categories. Within novice, for example, there is a low, a mid, and a high. Within intermediate, there's also a low, mid, and high. Within each of them, they've got that designation. We more or less focus on and teach to the novice, intermediate, and touching into the advanced level. Okay. Again, ACTFL's been around for a long time. These proficiency guidelines have been around for a long time. The proficiency guidelines really serve as a focus, a guide to classroom and how to help improve and focus your students on how to be able to use the language, not what you can memorize and regurgitate, but what can you do with the actual language. Now, that's a very brief introduction to ACTFL. If you want information, there's loads of information on ACTFL.org. ACTFL.org. Feel free to jump on there and read to your heart's content. With that, though, let's jump in and start breaking down these proficiency guidelines. We're going to start by delving into the reading proficiency guideline. And as we get into that, I'm going to read what ACTFL has. They've written a few sentences here as an introduction. I'm going to read the first paragraph for the novice level. And then move on to intermediate. At the novice level, which is really year and level one, level two, a little bit of level two, students can understand keywords, cognates, and highly contextualized formulaic phrases. Students get limited information from highly predictable texts in which the topic or context is very familiar. They may rely heavily on their own background knowledge and extra linguistic support to derive meaning. Students are most likely able to understand a text when they are able to anticipate information. Keywords, cognates, and formulaic phrases make comprehension possible. That's kind of their introduction to the novice level for reading. I'm going to jump now and read intermediate real quick. And intermediate level, really, level twos can get there towards the end of the year, but this is more level three, four, AP. This is more for them. Students can understand information in simple, predictable, loosely connected texts. They rely heavily on contextual clues. They can most easily understand information if the format is familiar. Students are able to understand texts on basic information such as announcements, notices, online bulletin boards, if the texts are non-complex and have a predictable pattern of presentation. The discourse is minimally connected and primarily individual sentences and strings of sentences with mostly high-frequency vocabulary. Students are most accurate when getting meaning from simple, straightforward texts. They understand messages in highly familiar everyday contexts. They may not fully understand texts that are detailed or when knowledge of language structures is essential to understand things like sequencing, time frame, and chronology. Those are the introductions to the novice and intermediate section. And remember, those are broken down also. There's a low section, a mid, and a high within both of those. Brandon, we'll let you jump in here. As I read through those, what are some of the text types for novice and intermediate that you'd be looking for if you're trying to find an authentic reading source?
Well, I would say that the first idea that comes to anyone's mind when we talk about reading is a book or a article. But there are so many different types, text types, that we can use. If you think about the amount of reading you do in a day, we read street signs, we read menus, we read emails, we read posters, we read brochures, diaries, we read
text messages,
advertisements.
So those are some of the same things that we can use as authentic texts with our novice and intermediate learners. We don't just have to find books, although those are a great source, of course, but any kind of a daily thing, especially nowadays with social media, there's so many possibilities for providing authentic texts to these learners. I would say we just need to think outside the book box and think about kind of our daily interactions that we have with reading material. And most of that is social media, news, signs, and books, I'd say.
I would agree. I've used things from my classes before that I found on social media from friends of mine in Mexico and other parts of the world.
Yeah, the challenge is going to be separating the novice level from the intermediate, because at the novice level, the authentic resources are a lot more limited, because at that novice level, they're focused a lot more on visual clues, very well-practiced topics. And so a lot of times the authentic resources, even at a very low level, are still too advanced, and sometimes that's really hard. You get to the intermediate level, it's a lot easier to find those authentic resources because, like Brandon said, there's a vast amount of them out there. For example, in my level ones for Spanish, sometimes I had to start off with just maybe a picture of a famous singer or famous actor from a particular Spanish-speaking country, and they would just do physical descriptions of them, or I would write a bunch of descriptions underneath in boxes, and I put the picture up, and they have to identify which of those descriptions fit that picture. So in some ways, it's difficult to find authentic resources, and you have to create, and we'll get to that at another point. But at the lower level, that's just an example of a type of reading that you can use. Sometimes they're just simple phrases. They don't even have to be complete sentences at that time, depending on their level. And then you work into the higher levels, whereas intermediate, like social media, you might find a blog spot about Selena Gomez or some other actor, actress, singer, and you have them read through it, and they're not going to understand all of it, but it's a lot more complicated text. It's sentence structure, and they focus on, and you just channel and you focus on what they can actually do.
Yeah, I just had a thought as you were talking there. Reading really is an interpretive skill, and we talk about that. It is interpretive, where at the lower levels where they're still trying to get into reading the language itself, really they can, images. You have to read images. You go to the bathroom, the pictures that are on the bathroom to know which one you should go into. You have to read that, right? You may not be able to read the word, but you have to be able to read this and interpret that situation, and context is going to help there in that case, obviously. But that's just another thing that popped into my head.
Yeah. So that brings me back kind of to Miles's initial question of do we or should we modify text and things? And as Davin mentioned, the lower the level, the harder it can be to find those materials. And so sometimes we need to rely on very simple and basic things like images or videos. And then it's just a matter of changing the types of questions that we ask the kids to answer to show that they can interpret those things. When we started working on our integrated performance assessment last year for the end of year assessment district-wide, or on the north end of the district, I remember feeling very strongly that we should not modify any text type in any way, because in trainings and things, and really great training Davin and I went to this summer at BYU, really, really good teacher from Granite School District who was working closely with BYU, talked about changing the task and not the text. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was when he pulled out, it wasn't an infographic, it was basically an article with some images and some data points on it, about the Panama Canal, and he talked about how he used that with his novice level learners and just thought, well, what can they do with this text? There's a lot of text in there that's way beyond them. But he says there is data, there's numbers all over this thing, talking about how many gallons of water get pumped out and different things like that. And he says they can identify the numbers, they can talk about the numbers. So he adapted his questions, but not the text. So initially I was really pro leaving text completely alone. More recently, as we've been looking at some things, we found a really good article for a intermediate low level that had some loosely connected text and some bullet points. And if we had left the whole thing alone, it would have been too much. So what we did was just eliminated some portions that the students, there's no way that they would have studied those things, and just left the information of the things that they have been over. I felt really good about it because it's definitely comprehensible, but it can still challenge them appropriately. So I have kind of seen both sides. I don't like the idea creating a text type. That I'm not in favor of. I'm not sure what you guys
think. You mean like creating your own reading? Like I wrote this as the teacher, or I had right. Bob, my neighbor, who speaks German, which I don't teach, but he speaks German, and he decided to write an article or a story in French that fits the content of my unit. So no, in that case.
Right. I'm not a fan of that. Okay. That's like they still, on portions of the AP test, they still have totally fabricated conversations in one part. And I kind of see why they do it, because they do need to fit a particular need. But it's still, it comes off as really fake. You listen to them and it's, hola, Juan. ¿Cómo estás? Everything's so perfectly and crisply pronounced and everything, and you just...
And we don't talk like that.
We do not.
No, we don't. That's not it's not a natural communication.
Right.
Sometimes, and I agree, it should always be authentic. Oftentimes you can have a native speaker write something that perhaps isn't authentic in the sense that it's written or made for other native speakers, but you can still use it because they're still going to use everything about the language that they have, culture and things like that. So they're going to use phrases perhaps your students wouldn't understand and things. Because I agree with Roger. Authentic materials are by far the best, and we shouldn't ever create them. It in a way, it kind of patronizes the students, right? We're kind of simplifying the task to make sure, or simplifying the readings to make sure they do it. But I can think of times where out of necessity, especially at level one, you almost have to alternate it or write it just because of the lack of resources. But that's something that I think we've all struggled with here is we use authentic resources best we can. We alter the task. But how much reading, how many reading materials do we actually have to give to our students? At times, there might be, need to be some creation or some alterations made just to ensure that reading is happening to some degree.
Yeah. And I would say, I would agree with that, you're not always going to be able to find the perfect article or the perfect dinner menu, the perfect anything. You're not always going to be able to do that. Especially, you know, we all have lives. I imagine everyone out there has a life. Sometimes you get behind and you have to hurry and race to find something, and you may not be able to. As Roger was talking, I was thinking about if a novice student is presented with an intermediate level text, even if the questions are simple, like look for these cognate words. What do you think it means? What do you think these words are? Bonnie Flint here at the district, she uses the juggling ball example, and this is a struggle that I have to remember this, but as they're presented with higher level text, higher level material, those things that they would be good at and you'd normally expect them to nail, these cognates that are almost identical in Spanish or French and English, they're gonna struggle. They're not gonna be able to keep juggling that same ball when they've been presented with two new ones. Would you guys agree with that assessment? If you've got a novice student and you give them an intermediate level text, which is perfect for their content, would you expect them not to be able to get as many questions right or as many words right as if they were reading a lower level text?
I would think so.
I was just going to say yes. I've seen a little bit of that in my own experience. I feel like that's a little more evident in other modalities. But with reading, yes, a little bit, that they get a little bit lost and distracted by the more immediate or intermediate text type and lose some kind of the ability that they would have had with the beginning text of identifying things or picking out a few simple phrases because maybe they're attached to longer, more complicated looking phrases. But
it's a bit more daunting. I know I've had where they've read stuff and we go back through it later and I ask them what a word means, which is clearly a cognate, and they struggle. And then we talk about what it might be and say, oh yeah, now I can see it. And they would say, oh, I just had too much. I couldn't figure it out.
And I would take into consideration too, they're not... You have to give them texts that will challenge them. They can't, you can't always give them something you know that, okay, they'll do this easy, because then it's pointless. You even think of our, in our native language, I mean, in college, I was a history major. I read a lot of books where I didn't understand a lot of the vocabulary that they were using. That's where you learn the skill of rereading and things like that to identify what you really need to know, even though you're not going to understand every single word. So although I agree, we can't drown them. We can't just keep throwing a ball at them, expecting them to juggle it when they've already got 2, 3, 4, 5. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the text is going to be challenging, and you want to make sure they understand that there are going to be words that they're not going to understand, and that's okay. You just tell them up front, you're not going to understand everything, and that's fine. Here's what I want you to try to understand, and then they can focus on that within the text. So it's a skill of rereading, and it's a skill of looking for specific information that they do understand.
That's fantastic. I try to tell, every time we do a reading in my class, I try to make sure my students understand that I can't teach them everything, and hopefully it doesn't break my AP and level 4 students' hearts that Mr. Nancy knows everything. I really don't.
You fooled me.
I fool everybody. No, I can't teach them everything, and I'm going to assume everybody, all the other teachers out there and you three here are the same. We can't teach them everything, so like Davin just said there, we need to try to get them, but they need to work on those skills. What do we do when we get to words we don't know? How can we work around that? What if, does it even matter, really? And I tell my level 1 students, if you stop at everything you don't know, which at this point is a lot, you're going to hate reading. So you've just got to keep pushing through it and stop every couple of paragraphs and then ask yourself, did I understand the main idea of what happened there? Did I understand what Bob did, what activity he liked to do? Did I understand that one little bit? Oh, he liked to play soccer. Why did he like it? He said it was, there's the word. He said it was fun and fantastic. I understood those little bits. That's all you need. You're good. You're doing great. You're doing what you should be doing.
Yeah, I think it's really empowering for the students to know what's expected of them at each level. For example, with my level 3s, my intermediate lows, I read the ACT full description of what they should be able to understand at this point, and I try to incorporate some strategies, because you're right. If they stopped at everything that they didn't understand, I mean, good luck. So I pulled up an article, and I said, okay, first let's go through and let's just circle all of the cognates, all of the words that look the same in Spanish and English. And so we did that, and I would just ask them, and they would say, oh, that's one, and say, okay, what do you think it means in English? And they'd say, we go through and we circle all the cognates. Then I would underline every word that we knew. And if we came across a word, if we even had to think about it, I just put a line through it like it wasn't even there. And there were some fairly important words, and they got a little nervous about it. Like, but Senor Bert, we don't know that word. That looks like it's going to be important. Don't worry about it. And so then we went through, and in English said, okay, what does this line say? Just follow my finger. And they're translating as I go, and then we get to a spot with a line through it, and we just skip right over it and keep going. Say, okay, what makes sense to go in that blank? And they could tell me a really good guess. And so then at the end, I said, okay, how did we do on this? And I'm like, well, we only understood 70, 75% or whatever. I said, okay, what's the main idea of the article? And they could tell me immediately, okay, look, what are we expected to know? The main idea, okay, anything about details? Maybe few details. Okay, tell me some details about this. And they could do it. And then they're like, oh my gosh, we can do that. Yes, we can. And it was just really cool to see the light click in their brains.
That's great. And you touch on another thing that I find important in my classroom, regardless of what it is. And that as a teacher, you're not the only one that should be familiar with these proficiency guidelines. The students need to know for their level what's expected. And for me, I try to make sure before any assessment, so usually around midterm and the end of term throughout the entire year, like, okay, let's revisit. What are you expected to be able to do at this level? Okay, and if you wanted to do a little bit more, this is how you can push yourself. So students, not only do teachers need to be familiar with these, students need to be familiar with these proficiency guidelines. So take some time. I would recommend take some time with your class. It doesn't take too long to tell them for reading, this is your expectation. It takes less than a minute, maybe two. And if we're trying to reach our 90% or more time in the target language, those couple of minutes really don't, they're not going to be that much. If you do one or two of those a couple of days throughout the term, it's not that big of a deal. So as we kind of mentioned before, reading is an interpretive skill. The other interpretive skill is listening. So we're going to jump in and talk about listening and try to do the same thing we did for reading. I'm going to start by reading the novice and intermediate introductions that ACTFL has given in their proficiency guidelines. So let's just go. For novice, students can understand keywords, true cognates, and formulaic expressions that are highly contextualized and predictable, such as introductions and courtesies. Students understand words and phrases from simple questions, statements, and high-frequency commands, typically requiring repetition, rephrasing, and/or a slowed rate of speech. They rely heavily on extra-linguistic support. They are also most accurate when they can recognize speech that they can anticipate, tending to recognize rather than comprehend. Listening is largely dependent on factors other than the message itself. Intermediate introduction here from Actful. Students can understand information in simple sentence-length speech on familiar or everyday topics. They generally comprehend one utterance at a time while in a face-to-face conversation or in routine listening tasks such as highly contextualized messages, announcements, instructions, directions. They rely heavily, though, on redundancy, restatement, paraphrasing, and contextual clues. Students often understand speech that conveys basic information when the speech is simple, minimally connected, and contains high-frequency vocabulary. They do require a controlled listening environment where they hear what they may expect to hear. So again, those are the brief introductions that ACTFL has in their proficiency guidelines. And we'll just jump right into that question, our question of the day that I've had you thinking about. And Brandon, what do you think, based on those introductions, should we be modifying any audio that we find for our classes?
You know, I think the answer to that is similar to the question on do we modify reading. But I'd point out, I think, that listening is very different than reading something. So if you were to survey your students, I don't know the actual numbers here, but if you were to survey your students on who felt they were better at reading than listening, I think that I'm certain that the majority of them would say reading generally is easier than listening. I also would think that most of them would consider themselves visual learners rather than auditory learners, the majority. Of course, some we know are really good auditory learners. So I think you got to take that into consideration a little bit. You know, listening is a little more difficult for most than being able to see the words and kind of go at your own pace when you're reading. When you're listening, you don't have that option. You kind of have to listen at the pace of the speaker. And so I think at times it does behoove us, I guess, to slow that down. That might be possible, or to play it in snippets, or to preload them with a little bit of vocabulary to help them, to help scaffold what they're going to hear. You know, just like when you say, look at this reading and circle all the cognates. Well, you could do the same with listening. You say, listen for cognates, or you could say, you know, depending on your content, you could scaffold it and say something like, listen for verbs in this segment or something like that. Any verbs that you recognize that we've just learned in this content. So I think similar to reading, you can modify, our best tool is to modify the task that we require of the students and to keep the source as authentic as possible, because our whole goal is proficiency, which is real life game speed ability. I would just add that little, I don't know, I'm curious to know what you guys think, actually. I'm just thinking when I thought about this that listening really is, that even though it's still input, it's a very different system, and you have a different set of tools and skills that you employ when you're asked to listen and interpret that way without the visual cues and without the ability to just go back a sentence and reread that. So my answer is similar to what Roger said about reading. We keep it as close as we can and we modify the tasks, but I think there are times where with listening, the kids need a lot of scaffolding. That's always a really low score compared to reading. So yes, at times I think modification, maybe even just slowing it down, giving them a preload on what it's going to be about, depending on what kind of thing you're trying to teach, what skill. So I don't know, did I answer that adequately, that we keep it as authentic as possible? But yes, there is a need at times for some modification.
I would say that's up for the listeners to decide.
Okay.
And I know some higher-ups in the district may listen to this, so... we'll find out.
You touched on it again today, but a few days ago when we were talking, you talked about game speed and how even in practice, like in different sports, you do some things at a walkthrough pace to get a visual of it, to get the feel of it,
right?
And then you maybe jog through and then you go full speed. So in that sense, it makes a lot of sense. And then also in some of the descriptions that Miles read, it mentions some things may need to be slowed down or repeated. And one of the famous things, at least with Spanish, when you're going to talk with someone early in your Spanish speaking experience, is people say, más despacio, por favor, like asking to slow it down. Because I remember one of my first days in Mexico being invited to lunch with some people, and I was brand new and I couldn't understand a darn thing. And so I just shut my mouth and ate my soup. And after a while, it got really quiet and I looked up and they said, Roger just asked you a question. I said, oh, I'm sorry. I just checked out because I needed it to be a lot slower. I couldn't understand a darn thing.
I think we have to be careful too, not to over dramatize how much we're slowing it down. I've heard some of the audios that teachers have used, and they're great audios, but then I've heard how slow they made it. then it becomes non-authentic. So we'll talk slower. Like if you ask nicely, people always help you try to understand, but they're not going to take minutes to explain to say something that takes a few seconds. I think about when I talk to my son as he's learning his first language, and granted there's a lot of differences between a first and a second language, but there's a lot of similarities. I don't slow it down for him a ton. You know, I don't stretch out, hello. You know, it's not anything that dramatic. I know he doesn't understand. I know repetition is key for him. And I know maybe I've changed a couple words or maybe I altered, but in the end, it's that constant repetition that one day he will get that sentence or that question. You do alter the language to help him a little bit.
That's your example there. I loved it, Davin, and I could see Roger over there miming it. Jerry Seinfeld even lost himself a girlfriend for talking so slow. Hello, do do do.
Hello.
But when it comes to the students, if you're constantly slowing everything down, I'm sure most of you shut the podcast off already. If you students are going to shut down if you're always doing that. So okay. it's kind of a yes. Sometimes. Sometimes you need to give them the, as Roger used with the game speed, talking about, and I think Brandon mentioned that as well, with professional athletes, whether it's football, basketball, whatever it is, they don't go through full speed the whole time. So even professionals, even advanced, superior, up to the distinguished level speakers, they, when it comes to reading and that, they still slow things down. They still take their time to hunt and peck over certain words to try to figure things out, right? So everybody's going to need that at some point, and it helps those higher levels even to know. Level 4 AP, that it's okay to need things slower sometimes. It's okay to stop on reading and really focus on those simple skills. Where are the cognates? Where are the words that I know? Let's try to focus and help them figure that out.
And it can become a little bit of a trap for the teacher, because the students feel comfortable when we slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice, because you want them to feel confident. You want them to feel and know that they can be successful. But we also have to recognize that game speed is coming. And they also need practice with game speed. So it's just kind of a delicate balance to do, to make sure that they're getting that game speed experience and practice, not just come test time, because that would be unfair.
Yeah, and I wonder, and Brandon alluded to this, test scores, and I'll admit my listening test scores are never, they haven't been that great. And district-wide listening scores aren't that great. And I wonder if it's either we're, as teachers, are always slowing our stuff down, or always treating the kids with oven mitts, like never just letting them go out and try things. So to me, I've tried to make it a point this year to do more listening, and I know I even haven't done it this year. I'm trying to, that's one of my goals, and I haven't done the best I can. I know I can always do more. So just, and that's one of my struggles is ways to incorporate listening into my classroom. Trying to figure out, you know, what can I do to get more listening? Writing is easy. Speaking is easy. How do we get more listening and more authentic listening? How can we do that to serve the students better?
Yeah, I can give you a few examples from my classroom, because that was one of my goals this year too, is to really focus on listening, which it is the hardest modality, but it's a modality if they can get it, it's going to influence the other three a lot. It's one way they can learn vocabulary and structures and content really well. One thing that I realized in the last couple of years is I was always frustrated. I only had a limited amount of actual listening materials. I didn't have a lot to use. Well, this year I realized, well, why not use the same materials? Because most of the clips that I use are probably 2 to 3 minutes long, which some levels it might be too long, but again, you alter the task to make sure that they're just focusing on what they can get out of it. But then I realized they're not going to remember everything about that clip anyway. Now, they might listen to it again on another day as you alter the task to have them focus on something else. They might think like, oh, Senior Lemke, we've listened to this one before. Okay, well, what did it all say? They don't remember, right? Because they didn't understand a lot of it. They just, whatever that specific task was, they remember that part. And then once I teach them something new and I expect them to do something new, well, then I show that same clip again, or they listen to that same clip again, and we focus on that task. And I give you an example. There's a clip I have of introductions where somebody goes around and they interview in Spain. They interview a lot of people in the street, and the people just give their name and where they're from and how old they are. Very basic introductory information. And I've shown that to my kids probably in 3 or 4 different class periods. But the first class period, all I did was had them focus on their age, for example, because we just learned some numbers, and I didn't even have them do the full structure of this is how you say your name. I said, I just want you to write down the numbers you understand, and that's it. And then the next class period, when they actually did learn that whole structure of how they say this is how old I am in Spanish, I had them write down the whole sentence. Well, how old is each person? So they already had the number practice. They're getting it again, so it's repetition. And so they're recalling the numbers, but now they're working on the structure. And then the next class period, I actually took the whole dialogue of the audio clip, and I typed it all out because it's very simple, very basic, and very repetitive because they're all saying the same thing, just different name, different age. And I omitted some of the key words like tango or soy or some of the ages. And then the students had to listen, and they just filled in the blank. And so it's the same audio clip. I just altered the task every time and just raised the expectation each time after I taught them. And I've done that with numerous clips. Sometimes I'll have students just listen to something and I'll say, I just want a vocab list because this clip is a minute long. I want a vocab list. Just tell me all the words that you got in Spanish. Just give me a detailed list. I don't know if that's necessarily the greatest activity, but I do that every once in a while. It's kind of a confidence booster. Students see like, oh, I got 20 words out of that minute clip. And then sometimes I'll have specific questions, sometimes in the target language just to really challenge them. And sometimes I'll have it in English just as a comprehension check of what they're actually getting.
Yeah. And just as you were talking there, we mentioned this with reading, listening is its own skill, and you've got to go out about it a different way, not necessarily the same as reading. Something that I started telling my students this year is listening is similar to reading, but reading, you can stop whenever you want. You can, oh, this is a word I know. I can highlight it. I can write over here what it is. Listening, the person is not going to wait for you, especially if it's already recorded. They're just going to keep going, and you have to be able to process those words. So even, and that may not be a good activity to do every day, multiple times a day, but I think that's a fantastic activity. I like that idea where, just write down the words you understand, because that's a skill you have to get. You listen for those key words.
Right. And especially at the lower levels where they're not used to listening to the language, you do have to, I do tell my students, well, listen to this three times, because your first time through, you're just lost. Most get, they maybe got one or two words, especially at the novice level. And then the second time, they'll get more, and the third time, they'll get more. And you can even alter the tasks. Every time you listen to it, tell them then to focus, you know, what did you get? Have a conversation and write things down so they get the general idea of what the listening is. And then where they're not sure, kind of write questions by them on the board. And then the next time listening, they can focus and try to clarify, is that what that was? Things like that. There's a lot of variations what you can do with just one listening audio clip, because there's not a lot of resources. But if you take that one clip and you use it over a two-week span, you can do various different activities. It really helps their listening structures, writing, things like that.
I was just thinking about this. This is a really interesting thought. It's never occurred to me. I always wondered, you know, what is so different about listening? For one, you can't see the words, you know, unless you're following along a script or something. But in general, on a day-to-day basis, you don't see the words. And you have to do, well, reading incorporates two steps. You've got decoding, which when you're learning to read, what that means is you see the word novice, for example, is the word in front of me right now. And I know how to turn that into a sound just by looking at it and turning it into a sound without even talking about meaning. I know how to do that. That's decoding. Comprehending is knowing what that sound, the word and the sound mean. With listening, this just occurred to me, so this might be stupid or really deep. You have to decode backwards. Like when people say something to me, like when Roger says, hey, your fantasy team stinks, I'm going to beat you this week because we play each other in fantasy football. When he says that, in my mind, I'm picturing the words, hey, your fantasy team stinks, you know, so you're kind of like reverse decoding, and it's a really complex process. And at the same time, trying to comprehend what those words mean, and it's faster than reading. So anyway, I just wanted to reemphasize that, yes, it's input like reading is, but it's a totally different ballgame. And some people are better at that than they are looking at things, visual learning, and some people are not. And most people, just based on our scores, are not. So it's really important that we incorporate listening into our classes.
Thanks, Brandon, for that. That's fantastic. So now let's kind of draw back a little ways. And look at these proficiency guidelines for reading and listening that we went and talked about today. And what does this do for your classroom? How does it affect you as a teacher? How does it affect your students the more you understand and know about these proficiency guidelines?
Knowing all these proficiency guidelines puts the ball in the student's court. So it's not just the teacher that knows what the expectations are for the students, but the students all know what their own expectations are, what they're supposed to accomplish. And it helps me to help them have confidence that they can do this, that it is possible. And really that all I expect them to do is try. Sometimes it's discouraging to hear students say, I'm not good at Spanish. I'm going to fail. I'm terrible at this. And then I tell them, wait, just try. Just do it. Just try. So they do it reluctantly. And then I almost always, I give it back to them and I see, you did it. you hit the target, you explained it, you read it proper, you know, you did everything just fine. So in a lot of ways, these proficiency guidelines help me as a teacher know the expectations for the students and me as a teacher what they should know, but it makes it easier on us because the students know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and for me, one of the things I've been focusing on as I've read more and more into these guidelines is I've been trying to create common rubrics. Rubrics to be used not just for assessments, but for everything that's done in class. And it's not an easy thing to do, to make them that common and simple, but complex enough that it tells you everything a student should be able to do. And I've really tried to focus on that to where not only does it help the students know what they should do, it also helps me know how do I need to ask these questions? How do I need to set the student up so if they're not just grasping at straws, I've given you a straw. I've given you something to work with based on the rubric and how I'm going to assess those. These proficiency guidelines, they help me know what they should do. This is the rubric, how you're going to be graded. This is how I need to make sure to form these questions to set the students up so they're not going to fall flat on their face.
Doesn't it feel like, it feels like they're more on your team, you know? It's like a road trip with a little kid who is asking if your target is to get to San Diego, and your kid is asking, when do we get there, what is this, where are we, stuff like that. Well, if we're teaching teenagers in these classes, regardless of what the subject is, they are so much easier to deal with, so much more open to learning when they feel like they are able to hold the map and see what your plan is. And I think that I think it's important for teenagers to feel that they're being treated as the adults that they're becoming. And when you do that, they are cooperative, their brains open up, their motivation increases. And so for me in my classroom, that's been a major help to have everyone on board with those standards, because they feel like they get to hold the map a little bit and say, that's where I'm supposed to be in January. That's where I'm supposed to be in May. That's where I'm supposed to be on the AP test, and they know where we're going, and they don't ask those questions, and they don't dig their heels in as much, and I think it just makes the all around your classroom environment closer to where we want it to be.
I kind of feel like it also invites a lot more creativity from both us and the students. Being more familiar with the actual proficiency guidelines or the standards and what students should be able to do, where we want to push them, too, because we want to constantly be pushing them to the next level. I feel like when you look at, okay, what are some examples of what that next level looks like? And then it just opens your mind to a lot of different options and opportunities. So one thing I did this summer where I was able to sit and help with a world language AP test. And I just noticed more and more that so much of the AP test was news-centered. Listening to news clips for their listening comprehension, and also reading not just advertisements but also articles and things like that. The AP test pushes these kids, and so I thought, well, if there's so much of a focus on news and articles and things like that, then why don't I just turn my classroom into a newsroom? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to go down. I'm going to visit Univision in Salt Lake City and talk with them about what their average day looks like and figure out how long will it take my students to do what they do in a day, and came up with what I think is a pretty good plan. It seems to be going well, but the students watch a little bit of news each day, answer some questions based on it, and ask some questions themselves, and then pursue a story based on those questions. And they write an article that we would really publish online to inform someone of something, and then they record it. We've done Shark Tank before in the business unit, all because I've just been looking at, well, what are my students supposed to be able to do at this point, and where do I need them to get to, and how can I find something interesting for them that's going to push them and to buy in and be on your team, like Brandon was saying. And I feel like it just really invites a lot of creativity on all sides.
Yeah, I like that. Activity, those ideas. I think that's fantastic. And we're all relatively new teachers. This is my third year, and I try to make changes in my classroom. They're all based on proficiency. At least I hope they are. I make these changes based on what I read and understand. And sometimes these things don't work. Sometimes they fail. They fall flat on their face. And this just came to me. So hopefully it works. But the thought of, yes, maybe this didn't work. Maybe I was a failure. Maybe I failed at this. But you know what? Next time, I'm gonna fail better next time. I'm gonna trademark that phrase: fail better next time. We're all looking out to try to make it better for the students, and we're gonna maybe have these ideas, and we're gonna try something. And I would say try it on your end as well. If it doesn't work, if you fail, then next time you try something new, fail a little bit better.
Okay, and that's a good point. That makes me think of, we expect our students to fail with certain things. Like, we expect to push them to the point of failure, or like we say with the Rocky IV clip, we must break you to effectively measure your level of proficiency. And that's how we see where students really are. And why are we exempt from that same standard of failure to see what we can do to improve next time? And so that we're constantly improving our teaching skills, our own language skills, and different things like that.
Yeah, and a challenge we'd like to extend to all of our listeners this week and in the next few weeks and terms to come is to pick some way to better incorporate proficiency into your classroom. And that's really the general challenge we're extending every episode to ourselves and to all of you. And I just wanted to share a story from the district, or from a district training that I had that I think illustrates proficiency teaching. Today we talked about standards from ACTFL, and we also talked about authentic resources as part of being better proficiency-based teachers. This experience I had was, the session was being taught by Chris Hall, who's one of our district curriculum heads. I think he's over social studies and possibly professional development. He's involved that way. Anyway, I don't even remember the title of the session or exactly what we were doing, but he put up this really complex art piece of a war, I think. It was some classical piece of art. I knew nothing about art history. I couldn't really begin to comment on it. But the question that he asked was, and first of all, I'll just point out that he put up an authentic resource. This was not some simple painting. It was very complex. But he modified the task for all of us in that room. And the very first question he asked was, and he looked right over at me and he said, "What are some of the main colors that you see in this picture?" And immediately when he asked that, I felt like I could get involved here and I could take a first step into critiquing art, or just evaluating and observing art. So then he went on to ask someone else a more difficult question and kind of built up the question until we were all on the same page, all at game speed, so to speak, with this painting. And I've really never forgotten that. And I've come to reflect on it a little bit more as we've talked and thought more about proficiency. And so the challenge we want to extend to you is to pick some way to better incorporate proficiency into your teaching. And based on what we've talked about today, the challenge we would extend to you is to look for authentic resources and to modify the tasks for different levels and to learn to use listening and reading resources in ways that you have not yet tried, ways that you don't typically think about. We think about books. We think about audio clips. Let's think about some other things, things that we do in our own day-to-day lives, things that we read, signs, text messages, Facebook posts. We listen to songs. We listen to great podcasts. We listen to TV shows. Let's use some of those things and start to modify the tasks to help our kids get up to game speed.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Brandon. It's a fantastic analogy. It's a fantastic challenge. I'd recommend to give it a try. And again, if it doesn't work, just try to fail better next time. Do better the next time. Thanks for joining us. And with that, I'll say a plus.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Adios.
Hasta luego.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.